And we're holding on page Yud Tes in Yevamos, almost the end of Os Mem Gimel, about three lines from the bottom of the Os. We learned the last couple of times all about the Nisinim, the whole story with the Nisinim, otherwise known as Givonim, where the whole story with the famine in David's times and them demanding to take some descendants of Shaul and kill them and all the stories surrounding that. So we said in the end, because of all of that, David made a gzeira that they should never intermarry into the Jewish people, because we said the Jewish people are Rachmonim, Bashanim, and Gomel Chasadim, and they demonstrated themselves to be none of the above. So the question is, the Gemara asks, so Nesinim David Gozer Aleihem? You're telling me that David is the one who made the gzeira that nobody should ever intermarry with the Nesinim? Moshe Gozer Aleihem, don't we find that Moshe a few hundred years earlier did that? As we find at the beginning of Parashas Nitzavim, when it mentions all the groups of Jews who are standing after Nitzav Mayim Kochem, and after it mentions all the regular Jews, it finishes off Mechoite, which means, in other words, the fact that it's listing them separately means that they're a separate class, not part of the regular Jewish people, and they are. Rashi brings on the pasuk that you have the same way as the Givonim came in Yoshua's times, and they claimed to be from a faraway country, and they became Gerim. Similarly, there were groups like that who did the same thing in Moshe's times, and they were also made Chot ve'etz v'shoyev v'mayim. So we see that already existed from Moshe's times. The answer is Moshe gozolahu dora. Moshe made a gzera about the Chot ve'etz v'shoyev v'mayim, these people who came and tricked their way into becoming Gerim. He made a gzera for his generation that they shouldn't intermarry into the Jewish people. The David gozel l'kula dara, whereas David remade the gzera for all future generations. Well, the question is, Vakati Yeshua gozer alayu. Still, in between Moshe and David, we have Yeshua, and he's the one who made the gzera for all time. Dichtiv vayitnim, after the whole story with the givonim, vayitnim Yeshua by Yemahu chot ve'etzim, that Yeshua made them to be wood choppers and water drawers, and there the pasuk says, Rashi brings the bow that Yeshua tells them, lo yikores mikem chot ve'etzim. There's never going to cease from among you those who are chopping wood and drawing water. So you're going to be in that job forever. So then Yeshua, when he did that, what did David add? The answer is Yeshua gozer b'zman shebeis hamikdash kayim. Yeshua made the gzera that they shouldn't intermarry with the Jewish people only as long as the beis hamikdash is standing. As in fact, the pasuk finishes off over there. Then he made them chot ve'etzim v'shoyev v'mayim ulamizbach Hashem for the Mishkan and for the Mizbeach, implying that when there's no Mishkan and no Beis Hamikdash, then they're not doing that anymore. So David gozer b'zman shebeis Hamikdash kayim, whereas David extended that gzeira even to when the Beis Hamikdash is not standing. Now there is a we touched on at the beginning of the sugya, there is a big machlokas Rishonim on that. Rashi and the Baal HaMor learn at face value that before without these gzeiros, it would have been perfectly mutter for them to intermarry into the Jewish people. And then we're saying we had three degrees of gzeira: Moshe only for that generation, Yeshua as long as the Beis Hamikdash is standing, and David forever. But were it not for that, midaraisa, they would be allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. Now that depends on. A few blocks earlier, the Gemara had brought a point that Rava said that when the Torah tells us loisis chatin bom, you're not allowed to intermarry with the seven nations of Canaan. So Rava had said that would apply even after they converted. But according to that, it would mean that the Gemara is rejecting that, and the Gemara is saying that no, after they converted, it would be perfectly fine to intermarry with them, except that the Givonim were an exception to the rule, as we're saying over here. Tosfos discusses at length over here in Yevamos and also in Ksubos and so forth. Tosfos discusses and brings that not necessarily. The fact that we might actually accept Rava's point that Daraisa, you're not allowed to intermarry with them even after they converted, and that would apply to all the seven nations of Canaan. So what it would mean is over here that Moshe and Yeshua and David respectively made a gzeira on them that they should be avodim, that they should be slaves. And once they are, nobody's going to want to intermarry with them. But to actually be allowed to marry them, that would be also Tosfos, and Rabbeinu Tam learns in Tosfos, would actually be also on a Daraisa level in the first place. One thing worth mentioning before we leave the Givonim is After all, the fact that they stayed with the Jewish people throughout all the generations does speak well for them, despite the fact we're saying they had terrible midos relative to the Jewish people. They did stay with them throughout the first Beis Hamikdash. They went with them in Golus Bavel, and even when they returned from Golus Bavel, which we're going to talk about in the next piece over here, the Psukim in Ezra and Nehemiah mentioned that there were Givonim who came back as well to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash and resettle Yerushalayim and resettle Eretz Yisrael. You have the famous, the famous or infamous false Navi Hananiah ben Azur, where the Gemara actually tells us in Sanhedrin, he actually started out as a true Navi and then he went bad, but the Pasuk mentions he was from Givon. And Rashi on the Pesukim in Yumiya explains that he was actually a descendant of the Givonim. So he was a descendant of the Givonim and he became a Navi. He became a true Navi to begin with, except that then he went bad. Not everybody agrees to that, though, mind you. The Kuzari actually writes, and he says that it's impossible for Gerim to become Nevi'im. Now, obviously, not everybody agrees to that, because, for example, if nothing else, we have Evadia, where the Gemara tells us he was a Ger and he was a Novi, but evidently the Kuzari would disagree and say that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi would disagree and say that Evadia the Novi was not in fact a Ger. But in any case,
the Kuzari himself, Ger?
No, the Kuzari. No, you're thinking of the king of the Kuzarim, whom the whole story is based on. This is on the historical facts of the king of the Kuzarim of the Chazars converting. Yeah, so the whole Sefer Kuzari is built around. It's all a dialogue between that king and a Chacham. But the author himself, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. No, he was a Levi. He was born Yid. Yeah. Anyway. Yesh Mutoris Perek Chi. So the Perek begins by talking about you have cases, you have various cases that you can picture where a woman is perfectly mutter to be married to her husband, but she'd be also to do Yibum with her brother-in-law. Say, for example, a simple case is, let's say the woman was an almana and she married a regular Kohen, which is perfectly fine. Now, let's say his only surviving brother is a Kohen Gadol, and a Kohen Gadol can't marry an almana. And it goes through, you have the other way around, she was also to her husband, but is mutter to her Yavam, she's also to both of them, she's mutter to both of them. Anyway, then it goes on in the Perek, it revisits the whole matter of wives and families of Kohanim eating truma, which it had dealt with in a previous perek. We had a little bit about it at the end of the previous perek about a woman who conceivably has one grandson who's a mamzer and another grandson who's a Kohen Gadol, and the one who's a mamzer makes it possible for eat truma, and the one who's a Kohen Gadol prevents her from doing so. Anyway, so now in this perek, it gets back to some of these dinim of who's allowed and not allowed to eat truma among families of Kohanim. So in the course of that, eventually it gets into a discussion of Maaser Rishon as well. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Truma L'Koyin U'Maaser Rishon L'Levi Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says that Truma goes to a Koyin and Maaser Rishon goes to a Levi, exactly as it says in the Pesukim. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer L'Koyin. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that Maaser Rishon goes to a Koyin. So you have to ask, what do you mean? L'Koyin V'Lei L'Levi? What do you mean? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying that Maaser Rishon goes only to a Koyin, not to a Levi. It says clearly in the Pesukim that at the end of Parashas Korach, it says that my solution goes to the Levim. Ela ema af, so ema af l'koyin. Right, what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah means, he doesn't mean that it can only go to Koyanim, he means that you could give it to Koyanim or to Levim. He holds that it's either one. As the Gemara is going to explain further on, the Gemara is going to explain where they each get it in Pesukim, but there's also, the Gemara is going to point out further on, that at a certain point in history, at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, Ezra penalized the Levim and took away the right to get Maaser. And now Rabbi Elazar and Azariah and Rabbi Akiva are arguing what the scope of that Gzeira was. So first, my time at Rabbi Akiva. So why does Rabbi Akiva say my solution goes to the Levi exclusively? The Pasuk says, speak to Levim and tell them you're going to receive Maaser Rishon from the Jewish people and you're going to give Trumas Maaser from it to the Kohen. So clearly, the Levim comes Shtori Kra. So clearly, the Pasuk is referring to Levim and telling them in turn you have to give a portion of what you got to the Kohenim. The Idach, what does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah answer to that? He says, Kedira Rishur ben Levi. You know what? You don't have to understand that Pasuk is referring to the Levim. It could be like what Rabbi Rishur ben Levi says. There are 24 places in Tanakh where the Koyanim are called by the name Levim, because after all, they do come from Shevet Levi. One of them is in Yechezkel. We have at the beginning of the Haftorah, Parshas Emor, where it says the Kohenim, the Levim, the sons of Tzadik. Tzadik was a Kohen. He was the Kohen Gadol in the times of Shlomo HaMelech. He was the first Kohen Gadol in the first Beis Hamikdash. So we see that sometimes that the Kohenim are called Levim, and there are many other examples. The Gemara mentions this point in a few places in Shas. It never actually lists what the 24 places are, and there are a couple of Achronim that offer various possibilities. In any case, the point is, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is not bothered by the fact that it says Vela Levim, because here it's one of the places where it refers to Kohenim. First of all, the Kohenim are descended from Shevet Levi, and of course on that particular pasuk, Kohenim Leviim Bnei Tzadik, there is the famous explanation in Chassidus that the Kohenim of nowadays will be the Kohenim Lasid Lava, and you have the whole point about the Shodash and Neshama, where the Leviim are rooted in Gvura, the Kohenim in Chesed, and Lasid Lava, the Kohenim are going to be rooted in Gvura as well, So, Rabbi Akiva, so what does Rabbi Akiva answer back to that? He says, look, Rabbi Akiva says, you can't say over here that Levium over here means Kohenim as well. Because the Pasuk says regarding Maiserishin that you can eat it anywhere. Now, anywhere means even in a place that's Tomei. That implies Misha Yochal Oichle B'chol Mokim. So that means that Maiserishin is meant to be given only to the people who can eat it anywhere. As opposed to a Kohen, would not be able to eat it in a Beis HaKvaris because he's not allowed to go in there. He can't become Tomei. So those words itself and the Pasuk imply that we're clearly talking about Levium and not Kohenim. What does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah answer to that? He says, Faket, the Pasuk is telling you, Kol Hecha de Boy. Faket, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, it means that the Torah is telling you, don't think that Maaser Rishon is like Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni, you can only eat inside the walls of your Shalayim, and you have to be Tahor when you eat it, and so forth. So no, what it means is, Faket, the Pasuk is telling you, go ahead, eat Maaser Rishon wherever you want. Deloy Boy Choyma. You don't need walls. You don't need to eat it within the walls of Yerushalayim. The ochel betumas aguf loy loki. And if he eats it when he's tomei, he's not going to get malchus. So both of them agree. In other words, that v'achal tamayis b'chol mokim is telling us a particular din. Rabbi Akiva is taking that to mean as basically a mute. It means that maaserishin goes only to those who would be able to eat it anywhere, not those who can't eat it in a place which is tomei, namely kohenim. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is taking it exactly the other way around. He's saying, Fakir, it's saying that when you're eating it, you can eat it any place outside of your Shalayim, and it doesn't matter whether you're Tomei or not. Obviously, yes, a Kohen can't go into a Beis HaKvaris, if that's where the Maaser Rishon is located, and eat it, but nevertheless, he doesn't have to worry about the fact that it's Tomei. He doesn't have to worry about that he's Tomei, and he can eat it wherever he wants. Well, the Gemara says, "Hahi ginsa." There was a certain garden to have a shoko. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah maaserishin mina. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah used to regularly get maaserishin from the produce of that garden because, again, he held that kohenim can get maaserishin as well. Also, Rabbi Akiva ahadre lepischa lebeit kivri. Rabbi Akiva went and turned the entrance of that garden to face a cemetery. So, in other words, the Yerushalmi actually, when it brings the story, explains that. This garden had two entrances, and Rabbi Akiva ordered that one of them should be closed up, and the only entrance that should be left open is the one where you'd have to go through a cemetery to get it. Meaning, in other words, in effect, therefore, he's going to prevent Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah from going in there and getting it. Omar said, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says on it, Akiva b'tarmiloi. Akiva has his bag with him, his shepherd's bag, a tarmil is a bag. It's a leather bag that shepherds typically use to keep their food and other things like that. So Akiva is coming with his shepherd's bag, meaning Rashi points out, as we know, Rabbi Akiva was first a shepherd of Kalba Savua. And I am living. Now, there's actually a couple of different ways that the Mephoshim have to explain that phrase. It can mean a statement, meaning basically that he's saying, okay, let Rabbi Akiva come with his bag, let him try to prevent me from getting this Maaserishin. Doesn't matter, I'll live, I have plenty of other sources of income. We know Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was extremely rich. So in other words, he's saying, fine, he wants to act like a shepherd. He wants to try and block me from getting something that I should get. Doesn't matter, I can live, I have other ways of living and getting it as well.
So what's his reasoning behind going to take the, if he's so rich, why doesn't he take the nicer
Ah,
rich?
so the Gemara is going to point that out soon. But basically, he was holding that is, since Maaser Rishon can be given to a Levi or to a Kohen, he's a Kohen, he's 10th generation from Ezra, so therefore we figured he has every right to it. But yeah, the Gemara is going to point out soon what exactly Rabbi Akiva was thinking in denying it to him, and what Rabbi Elazar ben Azayi was thinking in taking it in the first place. But anyway, so that's one explanation. The other explanation is he's saying it as a rhetorical question. Akiva Batamila, look at this. Akiva is coming with his bag to harass me and to prevent me from getting it. How am I going to be able to live? Meaning, not in other words, like I don't have anything else to live off of.
He
But
hasn't.
what? Almost like sarcastic, but also actually Ben Yehoyada says an interesting vote on it. He says that first of all, what's he saying? Akiva b'tamilai. Since you're not allowed to mention a person what his past was, that Akiva used to be an Amoritz and used to be a shepherd and everything. So he says the interesting point is what Rabbi Elazar ben Azayi means is Rabbi Akiva not only has the chokhmah of Torah, he has the practical smarts that he got back when he was a shepherd, as opposed to I never had that because I never had that experience, and I see he's still using that. So v'anochai, how am I going to be able to handle such a person who has not only the chokhmah of Torah but also street smarts? Then he goes on to say, also the Vanochaye is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah held, as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, that because Ezra had penalized, and Ezra was his own ancestor, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, that because Ezra had penalized the Levim, therefore Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah held that it should davka go to a Kohen and not to a Levi, as we said before. So now he's saying, in other words, I'm going to lack the mitzvah of kibud av, of honoring my ancestor Ezra by being able to by following his takana. So v'anochaye, how am I going to have the life that the Torah promises, l'man yarichun yamecha, for kibud av v'ein? Anyway, so in fact, Iyun Yaakov points out that is exactly why. I mean, the fact is, though, you could so what? He could still go and get the Meiser. So what? So he could send somebody to go into the Beis HaKvaris and then walk through there and get the Meiser from the garden. But nevertheless, the fact that Rabbi Akiva did it this way and made the entrance face only the garden was to hint at the very point that Rabbi Akiva had learned the din from Oh, that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had learned from that. We learned from the pasuk v'achaltem that oh no yeah Rabbi Akiva that it's not for a kohen who cannot eat it because he can't go through a basic kvaris. So therefore, so Rabbi Akiva actually showed that in practice by changing the location of the gate. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, fine, I understand. I'm not going to try to get around that. So Itmar, so we have a further discussion about that. Mipnei Why will the Levium penalize? Why will the Levium penalize to not receive the Meiser? Now Rashi points out that this is not a direct continuation of what we said before. There's two different things. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva are arguing on the basic din midaraisa. Are Levium exclusively getting Meiser Rishon, or is it going equally well to Kohanim as well? So that we just said they're learning from their respective psukim, and they're learning from their respective psukim. But now the Gemara is bringing up a side point, kind of, which is that we find in various places in Shas that Rabbi Akiva penalized that not that, that, that Ezra rather penalized the Levium to not give them Meiser. So part of the question is what exactly was the nature of that knas? It's going to depend. According to Rabbi Akiva, the nature of it was that the Levium or the Kohanim could get it, and according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, it's that exclusively the Kohanim should get it. How long that takana lasted for is another question as well. From our Gemara, which it's going to talk about over here, seems to imply that it was forever. Once Ezra made that takana, made that knas, then it lasts for all time. On the other hand, the Rambam writes that he did it only for the Levium of his generation. In that case, for sure, it doesn't really directly connect with the story of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva. With that said, the Gemara does tie them together. So that implies that it did continue on for some time because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva are living a few hundred years after Ezra. And we're going to talk about why he did that. So, Pligibar Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Yonasan v'Savaya. So Rabbi Yochanan and Savaya argued. Now Savaya could actually be the name of a person, Savaya or Savio or whatever. Or it could actually be that it could mean the elders. In other words, you have the other elder Talmid Chachamim that Rabbi Akiva is arguing, that Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Yonasan is arguing with them. Anyway, Chad Amar Shalai Olu B'mei Ezra. One said the reason was because the Levim did not come to Eretz Yisrael in the time of Ezra, as the Gemara is going to quote a few lines further down, that we find when Ezra was bringing his group to Eretz Yisrael, then he couldn't find any Levim among them, and he had to send messengers back to Bavel to get some Levim. Now, everybody asks on that you have in the Pesukim before that, earlier in Sefer Ezra. Yeah, Ezra himself and his group arrived in Eretz Yisrael shortly after the second Beis Hamikdash was finished being built. They started building it, when Kodesh gave his proclamation. Then it was stopped for many years. Then they started it again when the Nevi'im told them to restart. It was 70 years since the Churban. It was the second year of King Dariovesh, the son of Achashverosh and Esther. They finished it 4 years later in the sixth year. Then the Pasuk says, in the following year, the seventh year of Dariovesh, is when Ezra left Bavel and a few months later came to Eretz Yisrael. So he and his group came after the Beis Hamikdash was already built. And it's clear from Pesukim that there were already Levi'im there. So Rashi explains in other places where the Gemara brings this point that the Levim that were there were only the ones where Tosfos brings it over here, that they were only the ones who had chopped off bit off their thumbs. What happened is, the Medrash tells us many years earlier, when the Jewish people were first taken into Golos after the Churban Bayis tradition, so there were many Levim among them, and we have in the Kapitel Tilim, Al Naris Bavel. We're sitting over there, B'zachrenu Asiyan, and Kisham Sheilunu Sheveinu, though our captors demanded of us, Divrei Shir, to sing words of song, B'solelenu Simcha, and our captors asked of us to rejoice, Shiru Lanu Meshir Tzion, sing to us from the songs of Tzion, and they answer, Eich Nasher Shir Hashem, how can we sing Hashem's songs on foreign soil? Now, when they say Eich, it doesn't mean we shouldn't do that. Eich literally means how could we? We physically cannot. So the Medrash says that these Levim, who were going to be forced to take their instruments and play the songs of Tilim for their Goyish captors, instead they bit off their thumbs. So now they can't play the harps in particular. You need a thumb to play a harp. So now they're saying physically, Eich Nashu, we cannot physically do it. Those Levim had they had such Mesiras Nefesh, they lived, they survived the entire Golos Bavel, and they came back to help build the second Beis Mikdash, but they can't be the ones playing the instruments in the same Beis Mikdash for the same reason. That's 50 years already, they're missing their thumbs. So the vote would be, there were Levim over there, but not enough for them to be able to play the instruments in the Beis Mikdash, which is part of the Avodah. So now, years later, when Ezra is coming to Eretz Yisrael, he needs healthy Levim, intact Levim, and he can't find any among his group, and he has to have them bring some. So that would be the one reason why Ezra penalized them.
It looks like the old generation that beat up the town came with them,
right?
And yet to penalize the other Levim to come on.
So a couple of interesting points in that. First of all, the fact is that Pesukim do make it fairly clear. If you look at earlier in Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah, it does mention that there were Meshurim, there were singers who among the Jewish people who came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael the first time, and Bepashtus, that means the Levim. So Maharsha actually refers over here to, he explains in Kiddushin, where it also discusses this point. He says that actually that's just it. Because there was a shortage of intact Levim, therefore they had to borrow temporarily, they had to have Yisraelim play the instruments. The Gemara actually has a machlokas in a number of places. Who is it that played the instruments in the Beis Mikdash Bechlal? Who plays them up Yalocha? Is it the Levim? Is it Yisraelim? Can it be even the Avodim? So they may have had, under the circumstances, they had to make do with one of those other opinions. But aside from that, also, Rabbi Yaakov Emden actually has a long note on this Gemara over here, a very interesting note. He says that actually what it is like this. When they first came to build the Beis Mikdash, no question, they had a decent number of Levim with them. It's clear from the Pesukim. And we don't mean that all of them, like Rashi is saying, that they were all the ones who had bit off their thumbs. There were among them normal Levim as well. But now you have again the building of the first Beis Hamikdash was in, of the second Beis Hamikdash rather was interrupted for 18 years because you have the whole thing with the Kusim mastered on them to Kodesh and Achashverosh and so forth, and the whole thing was stopped for 18 years. So many of them left and returned to Bavel. Now when Ezra is coming after the second Beis Hamikdash is built, then he's finding that no Levium now want to come to Eretz Yisrael. So you still had, there were, Rabbi Yaakov Emden learns, there were still Levium who stayed behind in Eretz Yisrael. Sure, they're not the ones who were penalized. What we're talking about over here is the Levium who didn't come at that time, or who came and left, or whatever, and now we need them to come in order to start, in order to restart the Avodah and the Beis Hamikdash, and they're not willing to come, those are the ones we're going to penalize. So in other words, according to him, Parshat, there would be, within the Levium themselves, there are two different groups, the ones that Ezra penalized, and the ones that not. With all of this also, again, according to the Rambam, that it was a gzeira only for that time, then it also it works out logically that the people who failed to come, so we're going to penalize them. No reason that we should penalize their descendants after them. But from the Gemara over here, it seems to most of the Rishonim understand differently that it was a more long-term thing. Anyway,
specific mishpachas that came at that time.
So that's the thing. Also, yeah. So, well, as far as Kohenim, it says particularly there were four of the 24 mishmaris who came, and they had to re-split them up to create 20 to recreate 24 mishmaris. Levium, it doesn't specifically say. I mean, it mentions. That Levium, it mentions Levium who came, and it mentions like in Sefer Ezra, it mentions like there were 100 odd Meshoyerim, but not really a very large number. But anyway, according to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, the point is some of them did remain there throughout all that time, throughout all those difficult years. Sure, Ezra's not going to penalize them, no reason to, but you have the rest of the Shevet, or we're talking about, they're the ones who's penalizing.
I didn't get that. Why did the Levium bite off their thumbs?
Because that way they wouldn't be forced to play their harps and instruments for the Goyim, would capture them and take them to Bavel.
Not to play because the Goyim are going to force them?
Because the Goyim are going to force them, yeah.
Isn't there any, you're not allowed to force damage to your own body?
In this particular case, there was a valid reason for it. Yeah. Okay, onward. So that's one reason is Shaloi Olu B'mei Ezra. They didn't come to Eretz Yisrael in the times of Ezra. By the way, in this connection, you're mentioning that Al Pi Halacha, who is it that has to play the instruments? Tosfos points out there's also a machlokas in a number of places in Shas whether Ikir Shira B'peh or Ikir Shira B'kli is the main service of the Shira in the Beis Hamikdash. Is it primarily the vocals or the instruments? Well, vocals, no problem. You have any, even Levim who are missing thumbs can still sing. They just can't play the instruments. So if you say Ikir Shira B'peh, then there it's not required. Nevertheless, they still did want to have Shira B'Kli. They did want to have instrumental music as well. So that's one reason. V'chad Omer, the other one says, why the Levium were penalized is Kadesh Yismuchu Kohenim Olav V'mei Tumasan, so that the Kohenim will be able to rely, will be able to have what to eat when they're Tomei. They can't eat Truma, but like this, they would have Maiserishin available for them to eat during that time. So the Gemara says, "Mishlemi l'manda amar shle olu." Well, if you say the Levium didn't come up to Eretz Yisrael, mishum hachi kansinu, then that explains why Ezra is penalizing them. El l'manda amar kideshi yismuchu olav koyinim b'mei tumasan. But if you're saying it so that the koyinim have a food supply during the time when they're tamei, what do you mean mishum koyinim kansinu Levium? Is that fair? Because the koyinim need a supply of food, therefore we should penalize the Levium. No, everybody agrees that there is a knas because they failed to come up in the times of Ezra. The machloikas rather is as follows between the two reasons. One says that the penalty was only for the poor Kohenim to be able to get. So instead of like, it should be exclusively for the Levium. So we're saying that it will go now that poor Kohenim will be entitled to it as well. Whereas the other opinion holds, Kohenim may tumas and aniim ninu. Well, look, when a Kohen is tamei, in effect, you can consider him poor. Like this, he has a supply of truma, but during the time that he's tamei, he can't eat it, whether because it's a balkari or whatever kind of truma. So in that case, he's considered poor, and therefore he should have the right to have it. But in other words, it doesn't matter, according to that opinion, whether he's actually poor or rich, because right now we're going to consider him poor for the time being. Well, so the Gemara says, "Bishleim l'manda omer knas l'aniim." Well, now if you say that if you say that it's a penalty, so that poor people, so that the poor, so and it's only meant for the poor kohenim to be able to get my tradition. Well, that explains in that story with the garden why Rabbi Akiva is having it refenced and having the opening only to a Beis HaKvaris, because he's telling Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, look, you're rich, you don't need the Maaser Rishon. The whole purpose of the whole purpose of giving Maaser Rishon to the Kohanim was because they're poor. You're not poor, so you have no right to it. So then El Lamanda Omal Kohanim, but if you say that it is outright to the Kohanim and any Kohen is entitled to it, poor or rich, Amaya Hadri the Piskel Bekivri. Then why is Rabbi Akiva doing that? Fine. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is not poor. Still, there's going to be times when he's tamei for one reason or another. He's still not allowed to go into a Beis HaKvaris then, because even a kohen is tamei. He's still not allowed to go into a Beis HaKvaris. So why would Rabbi Akiva make this permanent change, which is always going to deprive Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah of the Maaser? Now, this is in parenthesis over here, and in fact, a different girsa, which Rashi seems to have had this girsa, is more straightforwardly, Elo Rabbi Akiva, my time I had, Lepiskel Beit Kivri. Why did Rabbi Akiva turn the opening of the garden to face Beis HaKvaris? If it's a matter of a Rabbi Akiva lived long after Ezra, so therefore the Knas is still going to be in effect in his times. One way or the other, the Kohanim should be entitled to Maaser Rishon at least some of the time. So why is Rabbi Akiva doing that? And the answer is exactly that. Hochi Karmalei. What Rabbi Akiva effectively is doing by doing that, by moving around the opening to the garden, he's saying to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, if you want to come and get this Maaser Rishon because of the Knas, then fine, Islach, then fine, you would be entitled to take it. Because fine, the Knas is that the Levim are not going to get it, or at least that they're not going to get it exclusively. It is available to you as a Kohen, so then fine. The Ika Osis Vitoris Haluka, but if you want to take it on the grounds that you're entitled to a portion of it, Leslach, then no, you don't have, because you're not poor, and therefore you don't have a right to take it. So Tosfos points out then, according to that, it would come out that Rabbi Akiva didn't really know what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was thinking. All this time when Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is taking this Maaser Rishon, what was his thought process? But still, then how can you do that? Tosfos says, what do you mean you're gonna make it face the Beis HaKvaris? And what happens if Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was thinking I should get it because of the Knas, and you've deprived him of it for no good reason? So therefore, Tosfos says, no, what Rabbi Akiva means by that is like this. If you think you should get it on the grounds of the Knas, you're rich, so therefore you don't need it for yourself, then don't take it as the Knas. Leave it for the poor people. So one way or the other, in other words, you shouldn't be getting it. So if you're getting it as a knas, then you shouldn't. You should be leaving it for the poor people. And if you're getting it because you think you deserve a portion of it, then also you shouldn't be taking it for yourself in the first place, because according to that way of looking at it, to begin with, it was meant only for the poor people. In fact, Tosfos says that can also mean what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah meant earlier in the story when it says Akiva Batamilo, when he's saying Akiva is coming with his bag. What he means is, in other words, a bag. That kind of bag is used not only by shepherds, it's used by poor people as well. Meaning, in other words, now we find in various places in Shas that Rabbi Akiva was a gabbai tzedakah. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, I see what's going on over here. Rabbi Akiva wants to deprive me of the Maaser from this garden because he wants to be able to take it on behalf of the Aniyim. He wants to be able to give it out to Leviim or Kohanim who are poor. So therefore, as opposed to he's saying vanochaye, but I am living, meaning in other words, I am a direct descendant of Ezra, and I have a living tradition going back from my ancestors from Ezra that on a Daraisa level, even I as a Kohen, I'm entitled to it. So yes, there's a Knas of Ezra, but even based on the Psukim that he learned before, really Midaraisa, I am as a Kohen, I'm entitled to it in the first place, and therefore there should be no reason that Rabbi Akiva is depriving me of it. But fine, vanochaye, basically I'll live with it. So according to Tosfos' way of understanding, in other words, is Rabbi Akiva, it's not that Rabbi Akiva is uncertain what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds, but he's telling him one way or the other, it doesn't really matter whether you hold of Knas or whether you hold that you're entitled to a portion, either way, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah doesn't pertain to you. And either way, it should be left for the poor people. The Orach HaNer actually has an interesting point over here. He says also, you think about it, if the Maisa, it's true, as we said before, as the Iyun Yaakov pointed out, that conceivably Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah could send somebody through the Beis HaKvaris to go into there and get the Maisa. Why is he giving it up so easily? The fact is, if it's taken through a Beis HaKvaris, the food itself is going to become Tomei. Now, with the Rabbanan, a person eats Tomei food, he himself becomes Tomei. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is not going to do that unless he himself is a time when he himself is Tomei. So now Rabbi Akiva is telling him, look, if you're taking it and you're thinking you're going to eat it in a time when you're Tomei, then fine. Me turning the opening to the garden to a Beis HaKvaris is still not going to prevent you from doing that. Maximum, my submission will become Tomei when it's carried through when you send somebody to carry it through the Beis HaKvaris. Fine, you're going to be Tomei. You might as well eat Tomei food during that time anyhow. But if you come in to eat it, if you come in to take it, but from the point of view of Chalukah, you want to eat it like any of the other Matnas Kahuna, which are eaten only when you're Tahor, then you're not going to be able to. I'm preventing you from doing that because now you can't carry it through a Beis HaKvaris. So therefore, so he's saying that, look at this, Rabbi Akiva has such chokhmah to be able to get me no matter what, basically. So how can I live again? How can I stand up against someone who has such chokhmah? So the Gemara says, now where do we see that the Levium did not come up in the time of Ezra? Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, Ezra describes, I gathered together the people who were with me. There were a couple of thousand people. I gathered them near the river that flows to Ava. We camped there for 3 days. I was examining throughout all the people on the Kohanim. I didn't find any Levim among there. And as the Pasuk goes on to describe, he had to send messengers to the leaders of the Jewish communities nearby to send some Levim. Okay. Since we're mentioning a change in what happened with the Levim, where we're saying that originally the Levim exclusively were entitled to Maaser Rishon according to Rabbi Akiva, or together with the Kohanim according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and afterwards that changed. So the Gemara, by the way, brings in another change also that happened as far as the status of the Levim among the Jewish people. Amar Rav Chista, betchila lo hayu ma'amidim shoytrim elamin alavim.
Thank you.
Originally, they would set up shoytrim. So you have shoftim v'shoytrim. You have the shoftim are the ones who actually paskin, who actually paskin the law, who actually judge the dinei Torah, and then you have the shoytrim. The shoytrim are the ones who enforce it. Basically police, but also like bailiffs, like court bailiffs and whatever. They're the shluchei based and whatever. So Amen of Chista b'tchil Elohei ma'aminim shoytrim elamin alavim. Originally, the shoytrim were appointed specifically from Shevet Levi. Shenemar, as we find a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, where the king Yehoshaphat, one of the kings of Yehuda, says the shoytrim halavim lefnechem. You should know you have the shoytrim from Shevet Levi in front of you, and he's telling the dayonim, in other words, to realize, in other words, it's your job to make sure that justice is done in Eretz Yisrael and that everybody is being judged fairly. Achshav, but now Rabbi Akiva says, "Ein ma'amidim shoytrim elam Yisrael." Now we appoint shoytrim only from Yisraelim. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "V'shoytrim harabim barashechem." The many shoytrim at your heads, where Rashi explains the word rabim means Yisraelim, where there's many more Yisraelim than Levim. Now, a big problem with that is there is no such pasuk as "V'shoytrim harabim barashechem" in the entire Tanakh. So what does the Gemara mean, Shenemar? So Tosfos Yeshanim deals with it, and some other Mefoshim deal with it, and they suggest maybe it's referring to a pasuk that you have in Parshas Dvarim, where Moshe is talking about when he's setting up the Shoytrim, and he mentions that he's going to set up the Shoytrim L'Shivteichem, or other psukim near there that mention that point, that the Shoytrim come from all Shvatim. So in other words, what it would be is, according to that way of looking at it, originally it should have been from all Shvatim. Eventually, they set it up only from Shevet Levi, and eventually, over time, because there weren't enough Levim, then they went back to the original thing from Moshe Rabbeinu's times, and they went back to appointing them from all the Shvatim. So in that case, that would tie in with what we had before, that there was a point when there weren't enough Levim available for such things, and therefore they had to change things. And the idea would be that it's not that it wasn't that from Matan Torah and on, it was always the Levim. In fact, in Moshe's times, it was from all the Shvatim. Later on, they did specifically Levim. One of the Mefarshim, I think also Rabbi Yaakov Emden, says that it might be there was a period of time we find in the Psukim in Divrei Yomim after Yerovam set up his Eglei HaZahav, most of the Kohanim and Levim moved out of the territory of the Aseres HaShvatim and came to the territory of Yehuda and Binyamin. They wanted to be able to serve in the Bais HaMikdash. They didn't want to have to do with Yerovam and his Eglei HaZahav. So therefore, so they left their Orei Miklat and all, and they moved south. So now the idea is you have a larger number of Levim in that in among Yehuda and Binyamin than you did before. So they have to find them a job. So therefore, they would find them the job, particularly as Shoytirim. Whereas after that, you had less of an issue with that. So therefore, they could go back to appointing them from all the Shvatim. But as far as but again, you have this Shoytirim and Rabban Barashaychim, which does not seem to be a posik. There is an interesting idea that someone came up with that sometimes we've had before, sometimes where the Gemara will very rarely quote something that's not actually from Tanakh as if it was a pasuk. Sometimes it'll be from Sefer Ben Sira, which we've talked about before, is one of the Sfarim Achitzonim, and the Gemara elsewhere has not such good things to say about it, but nevertheless, the Gemara says it does have positive things in it, and there's at least one place in Gemara where it actually quotes something from Sefer Ben Sira as if it was a pasuk. So someone suggested that this actually might be from, he mentions particularly, the books of Chashminoyim, which was where we have most of the details of the story of Hanukkah that we all know. I mean, the basic details about the Pach Shel Shemen and all that are in the Gemara and Shabbos, but most of the other details that we always learn as kids about all the battles that they fought and all the other Nisim that they experienced and all the Xeris that there were before that and whatever come from a couple of books called the books of Chashminoyim. So someone suggested that actually maybe this pasuk comes, maybe this quote unquote pasuk comes from those. We have those, but what we have is the original Lashon Kodesh of those books has not been preserved. They were eventually translated into Greek, and the Goyim have them as part of their Bible. For us, it's not part of Tanakh, Lahabdil. And now, in modern times, they've been retranslated into Lashon Kodesh, but it's obviously not the same as the original Lashon Kodesh that they were written in, but there is a suggestion that maybe this V'shotim and Rabban Barashaychim comes from the original lost Lashon Kodesh version of those books. Maybe. Ha'isha Rabba Perek Asiri. So it starts talking about you have a situation where a woman's husband has disappeared and there's Eidos that he's dead and then she can remarry and she does so and then her first husband shows up. You have many good Marcus Lehmann stories about that. You have all kinds of things, but the Mishnah talks about the Mishnah talks about all the various consequences of that. One of the consequences is. That one of the consequences is the Mishnah mentions that both she forfeits her ksuba and all kinds of other things as well. So the Gemara deals with the question of on what grounds is that happening? The Chachamim are penalizing her and she forfeits her ksuba and so forth. How do they have the ability to do that? So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Minayin Shehefker, based in Hefker. How do we know that Basedin has the ability to declare people's property Hefker where necessary? And therefore, in other words, part of it is because the Gemara is getting into a discussion like this. What kinds of powers do the Chachamim have in terms of overriding Dinim Daraisa? Here we have, in this connection, it mentions in the Mishnah also that this woman, her children from either her first husband or her second husband, after this happens, are going to be considered Mamzerim. Now, the question is, from the second husband, it's easy enough to understand why they'd be Mamzerim. She's still an Eishes Ish. But if she goes back to her first husband, then why should any children she has with him be considered Mamzerim? Wouldn't that mean that you're allowing them to marry Mamzeris, which if they're not Mamzerim, Daraisa, then they're also to do that? So the Gemara is discussing, so the Gemara gets into a whole long discussion of to what degree do the Chachamim have the power to override things Daraisa. So in that connection, the Gemara mentions Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Minayin Shehefker based in Hefker. Shenemar, we find a pasuk from Ezra. You have there was a serious problem with intermarriage at that time. So Ezra calls together a massive Ezra and the Sanhedrin, the Anshe Knesset Gedolah, call together a gathering of all the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael, and they announce V'chol Asher Lo Yavo the Shloshes Hayomim. Anybody who doesn't come in 3 days from now, Batsas Asorim Azkenim, according to the advice of the Sorim, meaning the Sorim and the Skenim in the Anshe Knesset Gedolah, Yochram Kol Ruchoshay, all of his property is going to be forfeit, and he will be separated from the congregation of the Gola. So in other words, we see that the Beis Din has the right to expropriate his property, and also to put him in Cherem. Rabbi Loza says you have another pasuk that shows this point of Hefker based in Hefker. And the pasuk says, Ela hanacholos asher nichalu Elazar HaKoyen, these, the what it mentions in the previous pasukim, all the division of Eretz Yisrael among the Shvatim, Oh, the inheritances, Asher Nichol Elazar HaKoyen v'Yeshua ben Nun v'Rosh Ha'Ovis v'Matis ben Yisrael, which Elazar HaKoyen, Yeshua ben Nun, and the heads of the Shvatim bequeath to the Shvatim of ben Yisrael. Now, why are we saying v'Rosh Ha'Ovis? V'Chimayin Roshim Eitzel Ovis. What does Roshim have to do with Ovis? If you say v'Rosh Ha'Matis ben Yisrael, why is the word Ovis coming in there? Ella, loy malach, it comes to tell you, ma ha'ovis man chilin b'neim kol ma sheyirtzu. Just like a father can bequeath to his son whatever he wants, he can, to a certain extent, override the dinim of Yerusha. It's actually just a long discussion in Gemara Bava Basra, what exactly he can do, but to a certain extent, he has the ibn amishum matona, he can do whatever he wants. But even mishum Yerusha, he can say, for example, that one of my sons should inherit a larger portion than another one, and that's valid, and he's able to do that. So we learn from that, af roshim and chilin sa'om kol mashi yutzu, the same way the heads of the shvatim, meaning in this case, the heads of the Sanhedrin, are able to bequeath to the people whatever they want, meaning that they can decide that we're going to take away from one person and give to another, even when it wouldn't be according to the regular din of the Torah. So we learn from that, hefker based in hefker. And in fact, the previous part also about Ma'aseh Rishon was also Mefarshim explained. The fact that Ezra could penalize and take it away from the Levim and give it to the Kohanim, or also to the Kohanim, is also based on this idea of hefker based in hefker. So therefore, the point is, in other words, that when you see that there's something involving that, that's not that the Chachamim are overriding a din d'oraisa, that's they have a power that the Torah itself gives them to do that. We'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, more about other areas in which the Chachamim have the ability to override dinim d'oraisa. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Golo Lamed Cheshvan. This Gashmiistika world hides and conceals the godly light in it. There's an energy from Hashem that enlivens and keeps existing every single thing at every moment and keeps on recreating it, but we don't see it. So therefore, it's an Olam Maloshen Halem. Comes Mimos Mashiach, we're going to see the truth, that the true Metzius of the world is only a keli for this godly light that keeps it alive, and we're going to see that Enoid Melavade, there is no other Metzius in the world other than Hashem. Continuing on halachas of mukta, we were talking about things that are keli shemalachta l'isur, a keli whose basic purpose is to do something that's osur. So therefore, so you're allowed to move it l'tzorach gufam. We said, for example, to use a hammer to crack nuts. You're allowed to move them l'tzorach mekoimam. For example, you forgot them on a table or a chair. You can move them on Shabbos, and then you can put it wherever you want. The Alter Rebbe does say that yesh mi she'omer, when it's mukta gomer, when it's 100% mukta, then there are some who say that it's osur, and it's better to be choshish for that unless it's a makom hefsin. In any case, now you have, let's say you can have the thing itself, you're afraid it's going to get ruined, that you're not allowed to move. That you're not allowed to move it. It's called mechamel atzel, for example, to move it from the sun to the shade, that you wouldn't be allowed to do on Shabbos. If there's a hefsin merubah, then the Alter Rebbe mentions you can put together with it something that's mutter, for example, a loaf of bread or something, and carry them together. Another example would be tefillin, for example, on muktzah on Shabbos, because you don't wear tefillin on Shabbos, but if they're in a place of bizoyan, then you're allowed to pick them up and put them someplace safe.